You can always tweet us at 99.3 ESPN Radio. We might even tweet you back. This is Schemann and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Schemann and Shepherd, 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. I'm Craig Schemann. Pete Shepherd is social distancing in Bonita. It is his birthday. I am here with Chris and Estero. Twist and Shout, that song was played on Ferris Bueller's Day Off when he left. He played Hooky to go watch a baseball game. Is that the connection, Chris?
Good connection. It was just a lucky guess.
Am I thinking too much into it?
I think a little too much into it. There was something on the first one, not on that one.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Today should be opening day for Major League Baseball. It should be Sweet 16. We should be winding down for final playoff seeding for the NBA regular season, and the Stanley Cup playoffs would when did that start? That'd probably be getting underway.
Not until mid-April.
Yep. They started before NBA playoffs.
No, they start at the same time as the NBA playoffs. They finish about 3 weeks before the NBA playoffs finish.
Well, because the NBA spreads out their first round games, 3 games, 3 days in between sometimes, which is crazy.
No doubt. All right, well, it should be a big day in sports. It is not, but it is Pete's birthday. All right, some other sound I want to get to because I want to talk to football. There is some football news we want to get to, and then Pete has a list here before the end of the segment we will get to as well. Here's, we talked about this yesterday. The NFL has said it is staying by its draft date of April 23rd, 24th, and 25th. In fact, NFL spokesperson Brian McCarthy issued a statement, "We are moving forward with the draft as scheduled." Again, that was on Pro Football Talk today.
Yep.
We talked about yesterday how a lot of the GMs think this is a bad idea for a number of reasons. Here's one of them. Saints GM Mickey Loomis, he wants that draft pushed back. He said this on the Peter King podcast.
I would say this. Look, this is my own opinion. My own opinion is that it will be really difficult. And I'd be personally in favor of delaying the draft so that we can get some of the work done that our scouts and our personnel people ordinarily do.
All right, and I think a lot of people feel that way. In fact, the subcommittee voted 6-1 to push it back, but the NFL owners don't want to.
Well, Ben, like we talked about yesterday, I mean, if you push this, when are you going to push it back to? Because there's no guarantee that if you push this back to, instead of end of April, end of May.
Or that, June, for that matter.
But there's no guarantee that anything's going to be better at that point, and if what Mickey Loomis is saying right there is we need to give our scouts and everybody enough time to get prepared. So now, I mean, what? You need a month to get prepared? You need 3 weeks to get prepared? Because and now you're getting close to the start of the real season.
You keep pushing it back.
The biggest thing with the draft is I don't think it's has anything to do with talent. I think they've done their homework and everything else. They know who they want to draft. I think draft boards are basically all set on the whole. This is all about how healthy are some of these guys. That's what it's all about. That's going to be the biggest gamble when they have this draft in April, if they have it, is how healthy are some of the guys
that they're
drafting.
And there are a handful of guys who this will hurt undoubtedly, but it's kind of the hand that they're dealt at this point, and everybody's life has been affected either slightly or it's done a 180 from what we were doing a month ago.
Right.
So you get drafted, what? Late second instead of early second? I don't think that that's enough of a reason to push this thing back when we're already talking about doing this via teleconference.
All right. So,
okay, this could be a good poll question. I was thinking of this right now. It just popped up again on ESPN. What do you think would happen first, the NFL draft or Dallas and Dak Prescott finally agreeing on a deal? What do you think will happen first? I think that's a pretty good question.
It's not bad. I've got something on that, too, just a minute. Just want to play one more piece of audio here. As to Chris's point about how far back you're going to push this back, now you're getting back into training camp and the regular season. From the college football standpoint, here's Brian Kelly from Notre Dame. He says July 1st is a critical date for college football. This was on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt.
To me, I think July 1. I mean, if you can't start training your football team by July 1, you're going to need at least 4 weeks strength and conditioning coaches are going to want six. You know, sports medicine is probably looking at, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. I think the realistic goal here is minimum of 4 weeks of conditioning before you put them in camp. I think it's very, very crucial that everybody understands that, you know, college football is going to be affected if we're not playing in 90 days.
And a sidebar on that, some coaches are now talking about, and athletic directors are talking about, well, we're missing our 15 spring practices, so now they're trying to come up, can we have some sort of OTA of our own sometime in the summer before the real camp starts in late July and August for college football teams as well. But Pete, back to your previous point, does the draft happen first, or do Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys come up with a long-term deal? Of course, the franchise tag is on. He hasn't signed it. He has till July 15th to come up with a long-term deal. Both sides are back at the table again. The virtual table. They are talking again for the first time since the team tagged him. Apparently, the hang-up is Prescott and his camp want 4 years. The Cowboys want to sign him to five. They want to lock him up.
But what's the guaranteed money? As we said, we know it's around $110 million. I'm sure that's what it's going to be a sticking point, too. I mean, really, do the years really matter? I don't know. It's about the guaranteed money, usually. But
well, yeah, it does. I mean, Prescott and his agent are thinking his guy's in the prime. The money keeps going up. They want out of that deal in 4 years, not five. Mm-hmm. Whether the guarantee and the guaranteed money over four may be better than, you know, over five. I don't know. I see his point. I see his point.
It's interesting. There's another interesting little tidbit today from Ralph Russo, who covers college football for the Associated Press. He said he spoke with an AD today who's going to have his staff start modeling out what it means to the department to have, and there's five scenarios here. One, a 10-game football season. Two, losing one home game. Three, losing two home games. Four, no fans all season. Five, no fans through October, along with other less optimistic scenarios. So that's one AD, and I would imagine a lot of ADs around the country are probably going through the same thing.
And every one of those scenarios, it's a dollar count, right? How much less can we deal with here? Dollar count.
And responses are, interesting. Brad on Twitter, sickening and more overreaction. Nick, college football season isn't going to be touched. We will be done with this months before kickoff. Fake news. Okay. I love the optimism, but fake news, you can't help them. Scott says, this is smart by the AD, but important to note that responsible businesses are doing this modeling across all industries. It doesn't mean they have inside info that we hold up for the rest of the year. Regardless, smart move by the AD. I hope most are doing this. The people keep saying this is fake news and overreaction. Seriously, get your head out of your respective butts and really start taking this seriously. Otherwise, there won't be any college football, and there won't be any fans. And that's the problem. There's too many people, even if it's a small minority. But those are the ones that are going to pass this thing on. Start taking it seriously. It's ridiculous. It's not fake news.
Well, but I think to that point, Pete, I mean, look, we know that all the stats and all the data that we're going to be able to look at is 14 days. So what we're doing today is going to affect us 14 days in the future. It's been about 14 days, I think, since everybody on the whole as a society has started to take this thing very seriously. Mm-hmm. The social distancing practices have been in place for about 2 weeks. It's probably been about a week and a half for businesses. Yeah. It kind of feels like the beginning of last week is when everything like really stopped.
Yeah, it's been 8 days since restaurants that serve liquor had to shut down. Because my last meal outside of my house was at Lansdowne's Pub on last Wednesday, where they had an awesome kielbasa sandwich. It was beautiful. But that's my last remnants of being out.
Right. So let's see, you know, let's give this 15-day window. Let's give this 2-week window some time to breathe. Let's gather all the information from there. And then we can make a decision based off of the information given to us, as opposed to just, you know, and I'm not saying you're doing this. I'm saying it's on both sides. You know, there's no reason to think that this thing is going to go on for another 6 months. There's no reason to think that this thing is going to stop in the next 2 weeks.
No, like, my point is, Chris, the people who are saying fake news are not, to me, are the ones that maybe aren't practicing right now what they should be.
Right. And
I agree with everything you said. That's the problem I have. I have a feeling that those fake news people are the ones that are out there saying, oh, you know, I can just do whatever I want. No, you can't.
And if you think it's fake news, that's fine. You can think whatever you want. But just know that if you don't practice what everybody's telling you to do, our football season is at risk.
That's my point.
And that's what Nick Saban said in his PSA.
And from a selfish perspective, don't you take away my football season.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or a lot of other things.
Well,
too,
now let me ask you guys this. I'm not seeing a lot of people anymore calling this fake news. I'm not.
It's a small minority.
Weeks, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I saw a lot
of it.
Not anymore. I think the country's come to grips with this.
Mm-hmm.
Even that pinhead spring breaker down here, backward baseball cap guy says, if I get it, I get it. He's issued an apology.
I think that was a big part of it, was spring break.
Yeah.
And because for the longest time, it was the narrative on this virus was, you can catch it if you're young, but it's not going to kill you.
Right.
So at that point, now you're taking the risk out of the 20-year-old, and they're not thinking about catching it and passing it along to the elder people in their lives. So there was spring break, man. I spent like $800 on this trip. I'm going to go party.
Right.
President Trump said earlier today that he's going to tell governors his administration will soon develop new guidelines to categorize counties as, quote, high risk, medium risk, or low risk for the spread of the COVID-19.
You know what they're doing? They're taking, listen, these politicians, they could tell you to the block into the street of where their supporters are, where they look at these charts and where they campaign and all this kind of stuff. You can take the same information, the same model, and tell people where the hotspots are for coronavirus. Maybe something useful could come out of that as well. All right. So, yeah, we talked about Dak and the Cowboys getting back to the table. Oh, a couple interesting things on your boy Tom Brady. One is a little more serious. He's put into the trademark for TB times TB. Yeah. He likes the Tampa Bay Tom Brady thing. He wants to trademark that. As you remember, he tried to trademark Tom Terrific back in the day before Tom Seaver. People said no.
Yeah.
Do that. Barstool Sports actually has a shirt out that's TBXTB.
Yeah.
So they'd have to take it down.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if he's gotten the copyright yet.
But they will. Chris is right. They will.
Right. They've got the shirt up for sale on their site, but might have something on the way.
Yeah, I got you. Now, I did catch a juicy piece of information from Bruce Arians, because, first of all, Bruce Arians said that he has called two teams on the behalf of Jameis Winston.
Yes.
I don't know what good this is. This isn't the part of the story, but this is the background. And he's called two teams saying, he's a hard worker and a really good guy. I'm giving him my full recommendation, even though he's not on his team anymore. But Bruce Arians, in the same interview, went on to say, he's telling these teams the reason we got rid of Winston is because, A, we got a chance to get Tom Brady. Everybody could agree with that. And if we didn't have Tom Brady, we had Teddy Bridgewater in the wings ready to go.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a piece of breaking news that nobody's really talked about. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. But, man, Carolina struck first, though, right? Carolina kind of came out of nowhere. Remember talking about this 3 weeks ago.
But I wonder if behind the scenes the Buccaneers had let Bridgewater know, we got Brady. Because that was about the cusp of when the Brady news was really starting to
heat up. Now, Craig, if you say that, you are insinuating that there were discussions going on before the legal tampering period began. Is that what you're implying here?
I'm not implying it. I'm saying it.
I agree with you 100%, by the way.
Flat out saying it.
Absolutely. I no doubt about it. Same thing with Ndamukong Suh when he got to Miami a couple of years ago after Detroit.
That's
that happened. I was like, how does that happen?
At 12:01, he's got a quarterback size offer for a lineman.
Yep.
Joe Montana also speaking out, saying the Patriots made a big mistake letting Tom Brady go. Obviously, Joe Montana still feeling the scars of when he was let go by the 49ers, but also keep in mind, they had a transition in place. They had Steve Young. He's looking at the Patriots going, they don't have anybody. Why would you let Tom Brady go? These are the words of Joe Montana.
And I know Joe Montana, but I love Joe, but I disagree with him. He doesn't know the whole situation. I just think it was kind of a mutual. I don't think the thing was as ugly as people think. I really don't. I think it was, they had a conversation. Brady went to Kraft's house and Bill was on the phone, and they just came to a conclusion that it was just time to split.
Yeah.
I don't think it is as ugly as some people are trying to make it out to be. It happens. I'm sorry. It does happen in sports, and I don't think the Patriots ever made him a serious offer. All they said was afterwards was, well, if he wanted to stay, we would have made him an offer. They never made him an offer.
Right.
So, You know, and why would Tom, again, why he should have tested free agency? There was no way he wouldn't have the way that roster was currently constituted. It wasn't going to happen the way it was currently constituted. And people, you know, this is like, you're going to hear theories from now until hell freezes over about why. I think it's way, way, way overblown.
And the theories will keep spreading because nobody's going to say anything. Brady's not going to say anything. Belichick's not going to say anything.
No, they're only
people
saying
will
nice
speculate
things.
For whatever and keep going.
Yeah.
I did see this I found interesting, Pete. In Los Angeles news. First of all, number one, Eric Dickerson is going to speak on behalf of the fans to the team about the lousy new logo that just got introduced.
I don't really like it. I don't like it.
I don't hate it.
The fans don't like it, and Eric Dickerson doesn't like it, so he's going to tell the Rams, this sucks, let's come up with Plan B. That's what he's going to do.
He's an employee.
Well, he is an employee.
Yeah,
he is.
He needs to back it down a little bit.
Well, we'll see.
Look, he's not the most important voice. He thinks he is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But he's not the most important voice. If the ownership likes it, which they do.
If Stan Kroenke likes
it. They signed off on
it's
it.
It's a done deal.
It's done.
Yeah. And then here's another piece of news. Apparently the California safe at home orders will still allow commercial construction for now for the new SoFi Stadium. So they can continue building it. We talked about this last week, whether this would come to a stop with everybody going home. We saw the pictures of the 405 virtually empty yesterday in Los Angeles, but construction could still continue. It was 85% done in January. So they're in good shape with that stadium if they could keep working. That is subject to change. And by the way, do you know what the first event in that stadium is going to be?
No.
It's July 25th at 26th.
A concert?
Your girl Swiftie.
Oh.
Taylor Swift is going to open up the new sci-fi.
Wow. Yeah, and she'll sell it out both days. Both nights.
That's a big sellout, but yeah.
Well, there's a Super Bowl on the line with this, actually.
Yeah.
The NFL rules, the stadium has to be open for one full season before hosting a Super Bowl.
Yes.
The Rams are set, or the Los Angeles is set to host a Super Bowl. What would that be? Super Bowl 56. So next year it's in Tampa. The following year it's in Los Angeles. So if they don't get this done and fully built out for the entirety of the 2020 NFL season, they'll have to move the 2021 Super Bowl to a different location.
I would bet you're absolutely right.
And the 2022 Super Bowl is in Las Vegas. I believe it's in Las Vegas. So you can't even swap because the initial granting process, it had Los Angeles this upcoming season, Tampa next year, Las Vegas the year after. So they just swapped Los Angeles and Tampa.
I would bet they would make an exception for right. That is absolutely the rule.
Yep.
But if we have like a half of a season, they just want them to have a few games under their belt so they can get used to how they got to operate and everything.
No question.
And it's too important. It's too weird of a situation. And that's the crown jewel of the NFL. They don't want Los Angeles, the whole deal. Absolutely. I think they would make an exception if they didn't get a full season in at that stadium. Let's go to the phones real quick at 239-337-ESPN. Charles in Naples wants to talk a little college football. You're with Sheeman and Shepherd. Hi, Charles.
Hey, Charles.
Hey, guys, you guys were just talking a few minutes ago about that AD doing his due diligence. It made me start thinking about what I've seen in the past couple weeks about empty stadiums. And, you know, I don't know if you guys tried watching Jimmy Fallon when he went with an empty studio. It was horrible, so much that they quit doing it. I watched an AFL, an Australian Rules football game the other night. The last game before they cut down, there was nobody in the stands. It was absolutely horrible, and this is a new frontier. These TV contracts are why they're talking about still playing the game, because CBS will show up. But I don't know how many people. I mean, they're going to watch, but numbers will drop if people aren't the fans. I've never really thought about it because it's always been part of the game of those fans screaming and cheering. But you know how much downtime? If you went back to a football game and just did a stopwatch of every time they had a fan's face on there and added it up, it might be 20 minutes of time that they won't have anymore. And I think it's going to change the landscape of how important it is to have a full stadium there.
Well, I think it's a great point. And hopefully it won't come down to that. Hopefully not. Brett McMurphy reporting today to Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby is saying canceling Big 12 basketball tournament cost the league about $6.6 million. He also went on to say today, and you know, that Big 12 media days in July for the Big Ten anyway are still on as scheduled, but another event we have to think about and make decisions on.
Let me clarify that Super Bowl sites moving forward. Next year, it's in Tampa at Ray J. The following season, SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. It's actually in Glendale and New Orleans the following two seasons.
So Vegas is not on the board yet.
Vegas is not on the board yet. So, but you could swap the two and just push Los Angeles back another season.
Okay. All right. Very good. I want to get back to that caller's point for a second. You know, I've basically... I've had two careers in sports, one as a talk show host and one as a play-by-play announcer. And the reason I wanted to be a play-by-play announcer growing up is because there's no other job in the world. If you're not going to be the athlete, okay, if you can't be an athlete, which I'm not, the only other a career, instead of sitting behind a desk somewhere pushing papers all day long, but to go into a crowd, call a game, have a buzzer-beating shot or a lad, the roar of the crowd, the feeling that you get, and you know this if you've gone even as a sports fan, but even as a broadcaster as well, that charge you get from a crowd in a great moment in sports is like no other high you can get in any other job in the world. And it is going to be weird seeing games without the electrical charge of a crowd. It's going to be weird.
Craig, I totally agree with you. The reason why I got into this business to begin with was to do play-by-play. I wanted, basically for hockey or football. And even though I didn't get to the level where you were, because I got into talk show stuff a lot earlier than I ever thought I would be, that's just the way it went. But the high school game, the top ranked high school games that I did, and a couple of JUCO games that I got to do, a couple of seasons worth, and they were exciting games. I mean, not the level that you're used to, but still, the championship hockey games I did had, 4,000 or 5,000 kids in it where scalpers were getting $100 to $300 at the door trying to get in with a bunch of NHL kids, that I didn't know at the time, but were on the ice, and some of the football games I did in high school and some of the JUCO basketball games. And even doing, I think I told you this before, I got to do, Nickelodeon, the 14 and 50 year old Babe Ruth World Series was in Cranston, Rhode Island, many years ago, when I, like, my second year in radio, and they picked me and my buddy John Parenti to, someday I'll get the tape from him and show you, you'll laugh your head off. And it was Cherry Hill, New Jersey against, it was a team in Florida, and I can't remember, but it was so much fun. Place was packed, and that's for, you're absolutely right, Craig. You cannot get the thrill. It's just different. It's a different type of thrill that, I'm glad you got to experience it the way you did, and to me, a little bit of a lower level.
And it translates through TV, too. It does. I mean, we were supposed to be watching Sweet 16 games tonight. You can feel the charge of a crowd when you're watching a game, even at home on TV. You and I just gave examples of what it's like to be a broadcaster. We all know what it's like to be a fan there at a game. It's why we go for that electrical charge. But that is one thing that does translate through TV when you're sitting, and the radio, if you're listening to a game or watching a game. And I just, it's going to be great once we finally have sports in front of no fans just to get something going and something to watch. But it's going to be weird. It's going to be different. And I'm wondering how long that excitement will last for us. I mean, it'd be better than nothing, but it will not be the same. There's no way it'll be the same.
No way. Can you imagine a Florida-Georgia game in front of nobody?
No.
I can't either. I don't even want to think about it.
Well, why play?
How about Auburn, Alabama, in front of nobody?
To watch it on TV, and so they get paid on TV.
No, but I'm saying, but why play it in Jacksonville at that point?
Well, good point.
Oh, I agree.
Right?
I've never liked that game being in Jacksonville anyway. I mean, you talk about two of the greatest home field advantages alternate every year. That's what I would
do. I'm with you, but I'm not with you.
Have you been to that game?
I've never been to that game, but I know a lot of people who have not even gone to the game, but just gone to Jacksonville for the whole weekend. And
I'm sure it's a blast.
Yeah, there's really nothing else like it in college football where they're playing. Well, I take that back. It's the Red River Shootout rivalry, whatever you want to call it. Of the SEC. That's what it is. But I understand also, if Ohio State and Michigan played every year at Ford Field, would it have the same vibe of the game being at the Horseshoe or at the Big House?
I don't think it would.
But you also have it split right down the middle on the goalpost. One half is red and black. One half is orange and blue. And it's got its selling points being at a neutral site, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well,
Texas OU, I think that the fans would like to see it being played in Austin or in Norman every other year. but it's also they get to go every year to it as well.
That's true. That's true. All right, phone number 239-337-ESPN, 239-337-3776. Pete has a list coming up right around the corner.
Lots of them.
This one's going to be, is it Sports Emmys Award? Or what would you
Sports Emmy Award? I got that. I got a bunch of college football lists that are fascinating. I think you'll find them fascinating. And something else I got to.
Okay, we'll do all that. Plus a reminder.
I got the baseball, the MLB opening day stuff, which is a top 10 moments.
I definitely want to do that too. Sheeman and Shepherd Cash Grab starting on Monday. Be giving away a total of $100,000 throughout the month of April. It's our own stimulus package. Every day on Sheeman and Shepherd, giving you three chances with the new keyword given out at 2, 4, and 6 every day. Be listening for that on Monday. Sheeman and Shepherd, 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. Today should be opening day for Major League Baseball. It is not. You know, I decided to, I got to put coronavirus on the Craig hatred list of hatred on the big.
I'll start my own list.
What's that?
Is eggplant on there?
I don't think eggplant's on there.
You got to put eggplant on there too. Right, before the virus.
Before the virus?
Yeah, you hate.
Yeah, you hated
more.
Eggplant before coronavirus.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Fine. Let's do it. We'll put it on there. Since it was opening day, Pete, you and I kind of reminisced from some early memories of what opening day used to be for baseball. Now I think that same giddiness and excitement is translated into opening weekend of college football or NFL football. But, I mean, it was different. But you have a top 10 list of memories or best opening day events?
Yeah, it's a couple of top opening day moments. It's compiled by ESPN. So let's see. You want to go from 10 to 1?
Yeah, let's go from 10 to 1.
We'll I don't think these are in any particular order, but I'll go from 10 to 1.
Okay.
Number 10, they got Madison.
Now,
yeah,
a
sorry.
List.
Madison Bumgarner hits two home runs April 2nd, 2017, becomes the first pitcher in Major League Baseball history to hit two home runs on opening day. However, the Giants still lost to the Diamondbacks 6-5.
Oh, Mason Saunders.
Number 9, Frank Robinson becomes the first black manager in MLB history April 8, 1975. After being traded to the Indians in 74, Robinson became the first black person ever to manage an MLB game when he served as Cleveland's player manager on opening day in 75. 39-year-old future Hall of Famer went 79-80 in his first season, posted an 894 OPS in 49 games as a player that year as well.
All right.
Number 8. Homer Happy Dodgers start 2019 with a bang. Remember, they had an opening day record, 8 home runs last year. This was March 28th of last year at Dodger Stadium in a 12-5 win over Arizona. Jock Peterson and Kiki Hernandez each hit 2 home runs. Number 7, Detroit Tigers, Craig Sheeman, stunning comeback.
Yes.
In?
What year?
1987.
1901 in the franchise's debut. The Tiger franchise.
I was a little off.
Tiger franchise played their first game ever just after the turn of the 20th century. They trailed, Craig, 13-4 entering the ninth. Then they pulled off a stunning comeback, scoring 10 runs in the bottom of the ninth to win in walk-off fashion.
It's never over till it's over, baby. And I think that's pre-Ty Cobb, too.
Yeah. Number 6, William Howard Taft starts a tradition. This was April 14th in 1910. William Howard Taft became the first president to throw out a ceremonial first pitch on opening day at National Stadium in Washington, D.C.
Nice.
Before an Athletic Senators game. Every president other than Jimmy Carter and Donald Trump has thrown out at least one opening day first pitch since then. Most followed Taft's model and threw it out from the stands. Until Ronald Reagan became the first president to throw from the mound in 1988 at Wrigley Field.
Trump has never done it?
No.
I thought he did it for the Washington Nationals.
I think he was there, but he didn't do it.
Okay.
Number 5.
Ty Cobb's debut August 30th, 1905.
Okay.
Yeah, 4 years after Detroit.
He was in the minor leagues at that time.
Number 5, Walter Johnson, number 5, goes 15 scoreless innings April 13th, 1926, making his 14th and final opening day start.
I remember
Walter Johnson lasted 15 innings without giving up a run. Senators ended up winning 1-0 over the A's. Johnson and A starter Eddie Rommel were the only pitchers to appear in the 15-inning game. Again, Washington won 1-0. Take that. How about that?
Yeah.
Number four, Babe Ruth homers in the first game at Yankee Stadium, April 18th, 1923.
Ooh, how about
first
that?
Game ever at Yankee Stadium, Babe Ruth hits a three-run homer off Howard Emke for the Red Sox in a 4-1 victory over the Red Sox, team that traded him.
Sad
Thanks,
day.
Harry Frazee, you idiot.
Sad day
for you. Number three, Hank Aaron ties Babe Ruth's home run record, April 4th, 1974.
Yep.
I remember this. In his first at-bat of the season, Hank Aaron tied Babe Ruth's record with a 714th home run of his career, was a three-run blast off Red starter Jack Billingham.
By the way, spent the entire offseason getting death threats.
Yes.
Being an African-American player and threatening Babe Ruth. I mean, it's too bad he didn't get it done the season before. Had to wait the whole offseason, just needed the one. But, yeah, a little
background. And I've said before, I forget the official day, not too long after that, when he broke the record and hit number 715, they were playing the Dodgers. And as the aforementioned, as I said, Bill Buckner is playing center field that game. You see him try to, he didn't come close, but tried to, he was pretty fast back then, jumped the top of the fence and tried to get it.
Mm-hmm.
He was hit between, you know, left center field. But Bill Buckner, that's him at center field whenever you see that. Number two, Bob Feller throws the only no-hitter on opening day, April 16th, 1940. Bob Feller threw the final and only opening day no-hitter in MLB history in a 1-0 Indians win over the White Sox.
Wow.
And number one opening day moment, April 15th, 1947. Jackie Robinson broke baseball's color barrier in front of 26,623 at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn. Robinson played first base, batted second. He went 0-for-3. Dodgers won the game 5-3 over the Boston Braves. So there's your top 10 opening day moments.
Oh, you timed that out nicely
on
the music
well.
Bat. Nicely done.
I was in his ear the whole time letting him know.
Yeah, sure.
Producer. That's a good list.
Yeah,
I have for you, for those of you that are really dying for some Major League Baseball here on opening day, I have a couple, a handful of things programming-wise on TV you may take a gander at. First of all, ESPN2 tonight is going to have an 8-hour home run derby marathon. I don't think I can watch 8 hours of home runs.
There's some good home run derbies in there,
There's
though.
There's a few.
Yeah.
But I can't watch. I mean, it gets numb after a while. Just boom, boom, home run, home run, home run.
But this is also Berman back stuff.
There's some
so
in
that's
there,
gonna
yeah.
be, there's only so much of that you can take.
We have ESPN will be debuting the Baseball Fix with Tim Kirchen. He will focus on classic baseball events on this day in history. So similar to what you just did.
Mm-hmm.
And was that a snore?
Snores.
Wow. And then the Major League Baseball, the MLB Network, classic opening days. I believe they're going to one of them going to air today. It's the 1996 opener of Derek Jeter's career as a Yankee. So there you have it.
And I got another short. Well, this is interesting. If you got time for this, real
we
quick.
We got loads of time.
Okay, it relates to baseball. Double headers per decade.
Is this another list?
Yeah, it's another list. Why? Of course, it's another list.
And
I'm all about
now,
lists today.
A list.
So interesting. Double headers per decade. All right.
Okay.
I'm trying to. So it started in, according to Elias Sports Bureau. In 1960. So in 1960 through 1969, and I'm going to all the way up to present day, but going by decades here.
All right.
From 60 to 69, how many doubleheaders do you think there were in Major League Baseball?
I think they were more common back then, so I'll give a bigger number. Let's see. Maybe they have 25 teams then, or 20 teams. I'm going to go a couple hundred doubleheaders.
Oh, not even close.
Well, we're talking like in total in baseball?
Total, yes.
And it's higher than that?
Oh, much higher.
Okay. So, yeah, like I said, big number.
Yeah.
400.
Was it 1,000?
It was 1,791.
Holy smokes.
It was a regular occurrence on the weekends, right?
You figure 25, 26 teams playing doubleheaders, sometimes Saturday and Sunday, teams.
Yeah.
So you can understand that.
Yep.
Now, the numbers will go, I'll give you one hint. They will go down as the decades move up here.
And is because nighttime baseball became more prevalent, so there was no need to jam in a doubleheader, right?
And a player's year, and you didn't want to play doubleheaders anymore.
That's a long day.
It is.
I wouldn't want to broadcast them, tell you that.
No, but I like being at them, though. I loved being back then when you were a kid. I wanted to be in the ballpark all day. I wanted every game to go 20
innings. That's too much
for me. I didn't want to leave.
I like a nice, pithy 2-hour, 45-minute game, and I'm out of there.
Even when you were a kid, like, you know,
well, I didn't go to a lot of baseball games. I left Detroit when I was 8, and then I lived in Indianapolis my whole childhood. So
road trip.
I only went to a couple of Tiger baseball games at the old stadium, but they were never doubleheaders.
All right. 1970 through 79. Take care of guess.
We were at 1700 before. I'm gonna go below 1,000. I'm gonna guess 800.
No, Chris, care to guess?
1300.
Closer. 70 to 79. 1455.
Okay.
Oh, it's close.
Now 1980 through 89.
I'm going to go back to my 800 number.
Here's your big dip. No. Lower. 600.
616.
Whoa.
616.
Whoa.
How about that?
1992. So we went from 1455 to 616.
Yeah.
1990 through 99.
I'm going to go...
No, hold on.
This is for the whole decade?
Yeah.
Yes, the whole decade.
200.
Greg?
I'm going to go like 300.
Closer. 326. 1990 through 99. Now right. 2000 through 2009.
Yes.
Guesses?
2000. This is going to be a... They only do double headers now because they got to make up rainouts. I don't think there's any on the schedule, so I'm going to go like 100.
Chris?
I said 150.
251 in 2000, 2009.
More than I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of snow days there.
Yeah. They're always makeup. Those aren't scheduled.
I know.
They're
not. Yeah.
And back in the old-timey days, Pete Shepard, you bought a ticket. You could stay there all day. Now they do the day-night doubleheader where you have to leave the stadium and buy another ticket to get back in at nighttime.
Yep.
It's a different game.
And finally, 2010 to 2019. Now remember, 2000 to 2009 was 251. So 2010 to 2019.
225.
100.
Actually, it went back up to 264. They played 13 more games from two doubleheaders in 2010 to 2019 than they did from 2000 to 2009.
That's because they started moving the season so ridiculously early into like mid-March, and we had snowouts.
Yep.
I think. All right.
So all but three teams in the league saw their average attendance decline from 1994 to 95, and that's when the last work stoppage was. And MLB would see its average attendance slowly rebound in future seasons, but it wouldn't crack the 30,000 mark again until 2004, 9 years later. And that's where, and you remember the city, Craig, that was hurt the most in Major League Baseball in 1994 when they stopped it?
Yeah.
Was the Toronto Blue Jays. It took them a long time to recover. And they had the best team, them and the Montreal Expos. Remember, the two best teams in baseball.
Yep.
But Toronto had won back-to-back World Series in 92, 93, and they had a great team in 94, and so the Expos were even better, and the work stoppage. And I'll tell you, those Toronto fans, they were not forgiving. It took a long time, over a decade, for them to really come back.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. So I'm trying to think back before my memory gets fuzzy. So Toronto, they moved to D.C., right? They became the Nationals?
No, Montreal. Montreal went to D.C.
I meant to say Montreal is D.C., and didn't owners flip like from? I thought the Marlins ownership switched with somebody else, and I can't even remember. Back in the day.
Well, John Henry. Yeah,
John Henry was part of the ownership group originally of the Florida Marlins.
Okay, mm-hmm.
He bought into the Reds. Then who was the terrible owner for the Marlins? Just sold
Not
the team.
Huizenga.
No,
sold
the,
everybody.
The one who
I thought
just,
Jeffrey Lurie, who's with the Eagle, I thought he was tied in one of the, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, it's a different guy. Anyway, he bought into the Expos ownership for $10 million back in the 90s, mm-hmm. got paid off when the Expos moved to D.C., got paid off, turned that like $10 million investment into a $500 million payoff from Major League Baseball, or from the new ownership group, I should say, then took that money, purchased the Marlins, which he eventually sold for $1.2 billion a couple years ago to the Derek Jeter Group. So it turned a $10 million investment into $1.2 billion.
Do you know that there is still an ownership group from the ABA when most of the teams that were in the ABA merged with the NBA? I'm talking about the Pacers and the Sixers.
Yeah, Jeff Lurie.
Oh, it was Jeffrey Lurie? Okay.
Not Jeffrey Luria, Jeff Lurie.
Thank you. There is an ownership group from the ABA that is still getting paid one team share from all the TV contracts in the NBA. It was part of the negotiation to go away in the ABA when like the Pacers and the Sixers and the San Antonio Spurs all joined the NBA. There was one group that was going to get left out and get screwed, but they got a piece of the TV money.
You remember the team?
Wow.
I don't.
The Kentucky Colonels.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, and you ask Hubie Brown about the Kentucky Colonels. I think I brought them. He will talk about the Kentucky Colonels. Until you're blue in the face. But he's amazing. The stories that he can tell about the ABA and the Kentucky Colonels are priceless. Priceless.
Good times. Yep. All right, we continue with Pete Shepard's birthday celebration. Don't forget tonight, 2005 Elite Eight. Since there's no basketball, we're going to bring you basketball. Illinois versus Arizona at 8 o'clock. Tomorrow night, a great classic championship, the 1983 National Championship between North Carolina State, Jim Valvano, Houston, yeah, Phi Slamma Jamma. That's at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. We'll have
Derek
the play-by-play.
Derek Wittenberg to Lorenzo Charles at the end.
It's fantastic.
One of the greatest finishes of all time.
So we'll have it here. If you want to look ahead to the weekend, we got George Mason versus UConn from 06. Got the 2010 championship, Duke versus Butler. On Sunday, we'll have Elite Eight. It is Marquette versus Kentucky from 2003 and the 82 championship game, North Carolina versus Georgetown. Lots to look forward to.
Jordan!
My friend went to Marquette. One of my best friends, and he lives in Massel. Pete went to Marquette, and at the last second, it wasn't against Kentucky. It was against Kansas, I believe. They played Kansas in a Final Four game in the. Around 2006, it might have been just after that 2003 game.
No, it was 2003. That was the 2003. That was the Dwayne Wade team.
Yeah, I think they were down by 40 at one point in the first half.
Yeah. That's amazing. All right, so we'll have all these games and all these classics. Stay tuned. It's Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Check out whatever ridiculous Twitter poll we're running at 99.3 ESPN Radio. Now it's Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN.
Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. 239 says that was the St. Louis Spirits, not the Kentucky Colonels.
Was it?
That got bought out by the NBA, and they still get TV money to this day. Not part of the merger from the ABA. It was one of those teams.
I'll take your word for it.
It could have been. All right, so, Chris, you know, I don't want to say this is like war times, but it's a different time than we've ever experienced in our lives. And there are shortages of supplies. I know during World War II here in America, not that I was alive then, but we had to ration materials, and companies that used to make cars made tanks, and, you know, the food was in shortage. But anyway, you were telling me during the break, somebody is, who is it that's taking all baseball jerseys?
It's Michael Rubin, who's the CEO of Fanatics, and Fanatics sells sports gear from everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
I was making sure Pete's mic was turned on there. But anyway, he tweeted out 25 minutes ago, woke up in the middle of the night last week with the idea of converting our Fanatics factory in Pennsylvania that makes official MLB jerseys into a facility that makes much-needed masks and gowns, and then donating them to help fight this horrendous virus. And he tweeted out a picture of himself in one of these masks and gowns that's made out of a Major League Baseball jersey. And you can tell this is made from a Philadelphia Phillies home jersey because it is white with red pinstripes, the mask and the actual gown. I'm sure that all Major League Baseball gear that's sold on Fanatics is made right in this factory. So I'd imagine you'd have 30 different gowns and you could kind of position them. Now they're being donated right now, but in the future, like I think a lot of Yankees fans would think it'd be pretty cool if you're in the medical industry to have a pinstripe gown that you could go into work with.
Not if your doctor was a Mets fan though.
Sell them for all of them, right?
We're in a shortage supply. You may get stuck with a team you don't like, but it's going to save your life.
But it's just something pretty cool, and you're seeing this kind of all over the place. But like, I buy a lot of stuff from Fanatics, so I thought it was pretty cool that that they come out, and they're not the only ones. I get it. Everybody's doing it. Most companies that can help are trying to help right now, which is a good thing. But it's. I don't know. It just struck me as something that was pretty cool.
Yeah. no doubt. I like that story. All right, coming up next hour, we got some stuff coming up. It is a holiday in addition to Pete Shepard's birthday. I'll explain what I mean when we come back. Also, I do have a list of my own of the top 10 head scratchers in the NFL so far. Obviously, the DeAndre Hopkins one is the one we talk about the most. There are others, so we'll talk some football as well. Plus, Wikipedia. Pete Shepard, Chris threw you a birthday present today.
He did.
For Wikipedia.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Let me guess.
It's all Boston.
Oh, what?
It's all Boston.
Boston
it's
sports.
All Boston.
Oh.
Yeah. So you should do well, but the last time we thought that, you got, like, shut out. You got
right.
spanked.
Right.
No, I did not get shut out.
Tom Brady trivia or something like that? Didn't you get smoked? I can't remember. It seems like I remember.
I jumped the gun on one question. Well, I only got a chance. No, well, the problem was I got his questions right. I got one wrong, and by then it was three. Now, the problem was I jumped the gun too soon, like I did yesterday with Peyton Manning in the two Super Bowls, where I should have waited for you to say MVP.
All right, well, be patient.
Five. I will not do. I will be patient.
The Dow Jones closes in 3 minutes. We are up 1,300, pushing 1,400.
Go! Nice. Wow!
Go!
That jump!
Go, baby!
Go! 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 That's what's
getting a lot of requests from texters on my phone that would like to join the show because they're unemployed right now. They're radio people that can't work.
Not even,
it's awful.
Not even
saying, if you need a co-host, they'll tell Chris.
Can they provide their own Comrex?
That's the thing.
Right.
No, more probable than not. No.
Right.
A big 4 o'clock hour coming up next. Scheman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.